Yeah. And he went to a modern Orthodox yeshiva until he graduated high school. So I said, how can you do, see the fires and this? It's, besides the fact that it's dangerous. And it encourages people to do it all over the country. I said, how can you do it? I mean, didn't they ever teach you in school that he was real. They really didn't know what was going on. So but he does know what's going on. He was a regular kid. He wasn't like some weirdo who became a rebbe. He was a regular kid. His sister is modern Orthodox. I met his brother in Los Angeles, the Bada Rebbe, and he was wearing plaid shoes. Right? An 8 o'clock at night guy. And his brother in Los Angeles was wearing plaid Bermuda shorts and minion and shout Sunday morning. So you can see that the very modern family. You know, they're not like withdrawn, you know, hidden away, underground, you know, nothing like that. So in any event, I'm not a big fan. But I guess the people who are not here are all lighting a menorah.
I'm probably less of a fan than you are.
No, you're also not. You're a health bug.
No, I'm not into health. Like smell, basically. I think
the smell is very bad. Well, they burn tires in Israel.
That's dangerous.
That's the thing in Israel. That little kids, somehow they collect. There's always some collecting place for old tires. And the kids know where they are. And they get those tires into their menorah. It's really a terrible thing. Okay, we're starting? Should I start? Look at that, I'm late. In memory of our friend and student Yosef Herzl, on the occasion of his 15th Yortzeit, as I've mentioned in the past, Yosef Herzl was a student in Yeshivat HaMiftar, and I would also, he lived in the city, but he came to the yeshiva in Efrat. And Thursday night, after my Parashat HaShavua shir, I used to drive him home, so we had a lot of time to talk to each other. And Yosef Herzl, I always found it remarkable that he was backwards. You know, most people go and make a lot of money, and then, or many people, go make a lot of money, and then they don't know what to do with themselves, so they give charity. He, at a very young age, decided to dedicate his life to giving charity. And he worked for the joint in Europe, reconstructing communities. And working, reconstructing the communities in Western Europe or Central Europe, he realized that he was not enough. He had not learned enough to be able to explain himself well enough. That's why he came to the yeshiva. Tragically, he died in Yerushalayim. But I remember him. I remember very vividly. So our friend and student Yosef Herzl, on the occasion of his 15th Yortzeit, and it's reasonable. That the main topic, the topic that I wanted to look at today, is the topic of tzedakah, which exists primarily in the parasha of Bahar and also in the parasha of Shoftim in Dvarim. In the parasha of Bahar is divided into two parts. The first part is about Shemitah. You know that Shemitah is an agricultural prohibition. Every seventh year, you have to stop working. You can't work the land. In fact, this is not exactly true because Shemitah bothers you for 3 years until you can get back to farming in a proper manner. Shemitah, of course, is explained in a variety of ways. It has social implications, it has economic implications. This was, you know, once very popular. It was very popular to see the Torah as setting up some sort of social order or intra-personal communal order. I don't deny that those things have merit. However, it is important to remember that the Torah itself presents Shemitah as a matter of faith. That in order to kind of give up the land or give up its produce for 3 years, you have to have faith that it will rain and that the next level or the previous year of produce would be so great that it would cover the needs for subsequent years. Otherwise, I mean, who could have the fortitude to act in this way? You had to have faith. And that's what the Torah says. The Torah says, explaining Shemitah, even though it doesn't preclude other interpretations, but the Torah itself says about Shemitah that it is the mitzvah of faith. It doesn't say that about any other mitzvah. Like shaking a lulav is not a mitzvah of faith, and eating a matzah is not a mitzvah of faith. The Torah doesn't classify it in that way. Right? And then, having discussed Shemitah in the beginning of the Parasha of Bahar, which, as I say, can be understood as a socially important, economically important, a new order for the community at large, responsibility for one person, for another person, all of these wonderful things that we can be proud of today. After that, there is a series of psukim that begin with the word. If you look at the pasuk here on the sheet, the first pasuk, ki yamuch achicha, yamuch, that if your brother, your brethren, if they become low, if they are
downtrodden,
well, not even downtrodden, but impoverished. Impoverished, they're not able to function. Umachar me'achuzato. Umachar me'achuzato. And he sells the only property that he has in order to live. Uvag lo alo hakarov elav. This reminds us maybe of Megillat Rut, although I'm not sure that you remember Megillat. It's almost a year since the last time we looked at Megillat Rut. And the Gemara says that forgetting is a year. Right? You know, it's if you don't think about something for a year, you forget it. So maybe you forgot it. But maybe not. But go aloha korev elav, v'gal'al et mimkar achiv. So this is like an interesting pasuk because it creates the relationship, a relationship between members of the family and people in the family who are in a difficult situation. What do those words mean? Bago alo hakarov elav. It was the person who is responsible, the relative, who is the redeemer of the land. Vigaal et mimkar achiv. And he redeems it. What do you mean he redeems it? He buys it from the person to whom it was sold. Like Reuven had the land, he sold it to Shimon because he needed the money. But then Levi suddenly is obliged to get it back to him. So you see that the Torah thought, apparently, I mean, you could make a case. I don't like to be, you know, to be too homiletical. But the Torah seems to say that in Eretz Yisrael, everybody has to have a piece of land. Everybody should belong to the land, and the land should belong to the people. Right? That's very important. So here, ki yamuch achicha, if somebody got to the point where he had to sell his land, that creates a subsequent obligation on his relative. Right? Reuven sold his land to Shimon. Levi is Reuven's relative. He has to buy the land back and give it back to Reuven. Ova go alo hakarov elav. Go alo, the redeemer. Hakarov elav, a close relative. Vega alet mimkar achiv. He has to redeem that which his brother Reuven sold. So another pasuk. That's pasuk kaf hei. Pasuk lamed hei. V'chi yamuch achichu matayado imach v'chazakta bo So again, another pasuk that says you have an obligation to support, to defend, to give strength to the person who is yamuch, who loses his ability to live in the land. Okay, Rashi pasuk kafei. You see the Rashi. Ki yamuch achicho machar melameid. From this we learn, Rashi says, she'ein adam rashai limkor sadehu ela machmat dochak oni. And if you can't do business, you can't do what we would call today, right? You want to do business with karka, you go to Romania. But you can't do it in Eretz Yisrael. In Eretz Yisrael, if a Jew owns a piece of property, he has an obligation to keep it. He has an obligation, it should be his. There's some sort of a way of identifying, right? Even though it says about the Jews in Eretz Goshen, the Jews who got to Eretz Goshen, Yaakov Avinu, Yosef, Mitzrayim, Goshen, remember? It says, it uses the word achuzah also. But to me, that's a problem. But it seems that Eretz Yisrael, the land in Eretz Yisrael, has to belong to a Jew, so much so that if you own it, you can't give it up. You can't do business with the land of Eretz Yisrael. That's Rashi. Ela machmat dochak oni, machuzato, velo kula, lemad derech eretz. He didn't sell everything. She yishayer sadeh la'atzmo. Derech eretz, Rashi says. If you can, sell part of what you have. Don't sell the whole thing. Keep something. Because the keeping of the land in Eretz Yisrael is somehow defining. It's the way you are. You are an owner of land in Eretz Yisrael. Today, things are a little bit different because there are a lot of people who own land in Eretz Yisrael but don't live here. I don't think that was the idea. I'm not sure. I mean, I can't say. Can I say what the idea was? No. But this is the problem that the Pesukim are talking about. Pasuk Lamet Chet, V'chi yamuch achichu matay yado imach v'chazakta bo. You have to give him strength. The Rashi says v'chazakta bo. Al tenichehu sheyered v'yipol v'yekashel hakimo. Don't let him, you see, he becomes economically problematic. He's not able to support himself properly. Right at the beginning, you know, buttress him, strengthen him, give him help. Don't wait till he falls, till he goes into chapter 11 bankruptcy. Get him, fix him, help him before that happens. And then Rashi goes on and says, "Elechaskeu mishaat mutat hayad." Right? You have to strengthen him when he starts to weaken, when his arm starts to weaken. And then Rashi says, Lamaze domeh. You know, Rashi sometimes thinks that, you know, you don't understand things. So he says, Lamaze domeh. You know, sometimes you say things in a kind of a parable. So people think they understand it. So here in this case, he says, Lamasoi shala chamor. So Rashi says, imagine this donkey. And the donkey has a masoi. Has this great bundle of stuff on the donkey. Odeu ala chamor. So you see, the bundle is falling. It's starting to fall off the donkey. So as long as it's still on the donkey, one person can come along and give it a push and ride it. And that it wouldn't be falling anymore. He says, Tofes bo mamido, nafala aretz. But if this all fell off the donkey and hit the ground, then the fala aretz, chamisha emami demoto. Even five people can't pick it up and put it back on the donkey. So Rashi says, well, it's easier. It's easier to support somebody who's in difficulty rather than waiting until he gets into tremendous difficulty and then trying to redeem him. That's what Rashi says.
Can I ask a question about this?
What?
Since they're talking about karka here, and this already comes after Shemitah, but in Shemitah portion they also talk about land returning to the original owners. So,
yep.
Why would one need to be warned here that the relative has to redeem the land when eventually it's going to go back to the owners anyways.
In 50 years, you mean?
Right.
So, but there's a lot of years before 50 years.
Right. But still, is this connected in the function?
I imagine that the idea is the same. The idea is the same. I mean, you could... These psukim are somehow connected to poverty, which has also wider ranging notions. Now, but I just want to make sure we know these psukim in Dvarim. You see the Dvarim Perek Tezvav, Efes ki lo yebecha evyom, Efes. Efes in the Torah means like, however. However, lo yebecha evyom, there won't be any poor people. Ki barech yibarechecha Hashem ba'aretz asher Hashem elokecha noten lecha nachala l'rishta. So the Torah seems to imply that there's a bracha that comes into the world from HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Eretz Yisrael, right, which has to do with the nachala. When did the Jews get the nachala? They got the nachala from Yoshua bin Nun. After Kibush, 7 years and another 7 years. So it took 21 years to get to Shemitah. Right, after they came into Eretz Yisrael, but Yoshua divided up the land in Eretz Kedar. Every mishpacha received a certain amount of land. Every mishpacha. And that was done with a goral, with a hagralah. And you know that one of the meanings of goral means it's somehow divinely oriented. That's what it means. I'm not defending it or... I'm just saying that in the Torah, when you think of a goral, you think, why did Haman throw a goral? Why didn't he just throw a dart at the calendar and whatever came out? Because Haman wanted to get the best day for destroying the Jewish people. So I don't know what the best day in Haman's mind was, but I imagine he thought that if he could, appeal poor, Huhagoral, that he would be kind of getting support from the gods. That's what he wanted. He wanted to say, it's one thing to fight a war and win, and it's another thing to win without fighting. So that's what Haman wanted. He wanted to have all the gods on his side. That's the goral. So the Achuzah in Eretz Yisrael was also the result of a goral. It was kind of divinely oriented. This connection and this pasuk says lo yebecha evyon. Efes ki lo yebecha evyon. There won't be any poor people, and that's a bracha ki barech yivarechecha Hashem ba'aretz asher Hashem elokecha lecha nachala l'rishta. Because the nachala, after all, comes from God. So how could you ever be in a position where you'd have to give up your nachala? Like the psukim that we just read in Bahar. The Pasuk of Bahar says, if you're poor, you can't eat. So of course you're going to sell something that you own. Rashi says, don't sell everything. But you're going to sell things that you own. You're going to. But the Pasuk of Dvarim says, lo yebecha evyo. There won't be a poor person who will have to sell his nachala, his achuza, because you received it as a... And then the next pasuk, not the next, but several pasukim later, it says, "Ki yebecha evyon me'acharachecha be'chatzarecha." If there is an evyon, even though God has just promised that there won't be an evyon, and then the pasuk itself says, "If there is an evyon, be'chatzarecha, shar is the gate to the city, where a lot of the important things took place at the shar." The Beit Din was at the Shar, the Rabbadim, the Dayanim, they were all sitting around, and that was their offices. Their offices were at the Shar, Bar Tzicha, Asher Hashem Lokech Notein Lach, again, Asher Hashem Lokech Notein Lach, Lach is singular. Singular means each and every one of you gets Eretz Yisrael. It's not a collective ownership. Maybe it is a collective ownership, but it's also a private ownership, a personal ownership. Each one of you, lo ta'ameitzid levavcha, Lo tametzet levavcha. Don't become unpleasant. Don't harden your heart. Don't look away at the poor piece of lo tikpotzet yetcha me'achicha. Don't keep your hand, your fist closed when you see the poor. I mean, help him out. Give him what he needs. Ki lo yechtal evyon mikerev haaretz. Now this is really devastating, I think. A devastating pasuk. It says lo yechtal. I mean, okay, up to now, it could happen. It could be. There's a bracha that might prevent there being an evyon. But what's the point of this pasuk? Osha Kain, Osha Lo, either there'll be an Evyon, there won't be an Evyon. Along comes the Torah. The Torah says something quite remarkable. Quite remarkable. Ki lo yechtal Evyon mikerev haaretz. There'll always be an Evyon. And you'll always have this responsibility. You know, this is like a general question. Do you have things in the Torah that kind of peter out? You know, they were true for a time. So the Ramban says, as an introduction to the book of Bamidbar, the Rashbam says, look, there are things in the book of Bamidbar that were for its time. They're not for continuing time. Even though we think about mitzvot in the Torah, we think of mitzvot as being forever. That's what a mitzvah is. It's always. So he said, what about the Beit HaMikdash? Okay, somehow that's also forever. I mean, you'll figure it out. You make it forever. Either that we'll rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, or we'll turn the Beit HaMikdash into Torah learning, into tefillah. We'll do something. We'll make it work. But there are things that are mitzvot. There are things that are mitzvot that are lisha'atam. Only for that time in the desert. Like, there was this attack of snakes. Remember? Right? The Nechashim. So God told Moshe Rabbeinu, Nechash nechoshet. You make a copper snake, you take this copper and you draw a snake on and you walk around, and that'll solve the problems. The Ramban said that mitzvah was a mitzvah l'sha'ata. It doesn't exist for us. We don't have to make a snake. We don't have to put it on a copper background. There's no nechash nechoshet in our world, but it is in the Torah. So the Ramban says, look, there are mitzvot in the Torah that are for its time and not for any time subsequently. Even though we would like the Torah to be meaningful, right? That's what Rashi taught us. Rashi taught us that the psukim in the Torah are meaningful for us today. They're meaningful for us. So we would like the Nechash Nechoshet to be meaningful. So there's some people who are good at that. You know, making things meaningful. But I'm saying it's a theoretical underpinning of our learning. That when we learn a pasuk in the Chumash, we'd like it to be relevant. That's what, you know, that's sort of an assumption of the way we learn. But here we have this pasuk, Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. I mean, I don't know what that means. Al kein anoch mitzavcha leimo patoch tiktach et yadcha la'achicha, that therefore I am giving you this ongoing, forever mitzvah. Patoch tiftach et yadcha, open up your hand, la'achicha, la'aniyecha, levyoncha, va'aretzecha. Ani, the poor, evyon, the distraught, the, you know, those who are really in bad shape, not only aniyim. So, in any event, I remind you, there's a source that I'm going to tell you that is not on the sheet. It's my fault. I just forgot to write it down. But it's in the Rambam. It's in the Rambam, Ilchot Tshuva, Perek Vav Halacha He. Now, the Rambam tried to deal with this problem of free will versus divine knowledge, right? If God knows what's going to happen, how can you say that we have free will? Right? This is like everybody knows that problem. So some people try to answer it, and some people say, look, every religion has a mystery. So let that be the mystery for Judaism. that even though God knows what's going to happen, you have free will anyway. You know, each of you can choose your path in this problem. The Rambam said that this is a problem that you can't really solve. We don't have the wherewithal, the ability. You can expand upon it. You know, there's a problem of what time is, what the time, passing time, mean for God. It could be there's only a summary of everything in heaven. You know, it's like, we know how it works out, but God knows how it works out, but that doesn't mean God's involved in the process. You know, you say whatever you say. You say whatever you say. Whatever you think is right makes me happy. But look at the Rambam. This Rambam says this. Says this, to read the whole thing. He says, every person who is drawn, nimshach, b'darchei ha-chokhma v'tzedek, he's drawn to wisdom and righteousness. He desires them and he runs after them. And that's what our Rabbanim, Zichronam Levracha, meant when they say, somebody who comes to purify himself, wants to be pure, heaven helps him. Heaven helps you. You desire it and God helps him. And that is to say, he will find himself helped by this, by the fact that he wants to be pure. He says, after all, it says in the Torah, Vavadum v'inu otam, right, that God says to Avram Avinu about the stay of Bnei Yisrael in Mitzrayim, and says, Avadum v'inu otam, that they will make them slaves, and inu otam, and they will torture them. Hare, the Rambam says, he commanded the Egyptians to do terrible things. It's God says to Avram Avinu, right? Remember, Avram was before Yaakov, before Yosef, before Moshe. So Avram, God said to Avram, they will torture you and make you miserable. They, the Egyptians, when you're enslaved, will torture you, right? And then Hare Gazar al ha Mitzrim lasod ra. He says, why should the Egyptians be punished for what they did in Egypt? After all, God made them do it. It's like they were the agents. They were the agents of God. They never heard. Why should the Babylonians be punished for the Churban Bayit Rishon? Why should the Romans be punished for Churban Bayit Sheni? After all, they were carrying out the divine will. They weren't doing it on their own. If God didn't want them to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, they never could have done it. So, this is what he says. And then, there's a pasuk at the end of Dvarim. And the pasuk says, this is what Moshe Rabbeinu says. The people in Eretz Yisrael, the Jews who come to Eretz Yisrael, they will assert themselves, and they will follow the Zanach Re'elei Nechei Ha'aretz. They would go after, they would become idolaters. So the Rambam says, so the Pasuk says that they're going to become idolaters. So why are they punished? Why are they going to be punished for being idolaters? Why is there a Churban Bayit Rishon and then a Churban Bayit Sheni? Because it was a divine fiat that this should happen. So if that's what God said, so why should they be punished? That's what he says. The Rambam says, why did God punish the Jews for doing what God said they were going to do? That doesn't make any sense according to the Rambam. Or at least there's a question. There is a question. And so the Rambam has this sort of tenuous answer. You could like it, you could leave it. It's your business. But this is his answer. He says, God never said that each individual Jew has to become an idolater. He did not, that was not the command. But each and every Jew in Eretz Yikanaan at that time right, will not serve idolatrous, will not become an idolater if he really doesn't want to. Right? And the Torah just tells us, min hagoshel olam, min hagoshel, the way of the world. The way of the world is that you're influenced by the stronger culture, by the people who are, sitting in couches. That's the people who sit on plastic keter chairs. So you'll be influenced by all of them. So that's what the Torah says. The Torah says when you come to Eretz Yisrael, you'll probably end up being idolatrous. So that was the Torah acting as a sociologist. Right? This is what happens. This is what happens to people. But that doesn't mean that any individual has been denied his free will. He could still have the free will not to do it. And then he says, the Rambam says, right? Remember, this is chapter 6, Halacha Hey. The Rambam says, Ha Lema. You know, when we learn Hilchos Tshuva during Elul, we never get this far. Never. So it's not 1 year, you have to learn it backwards. Starting from chapter 10 and go back, you still might not get to chapter 6. In any event, Hele Mazet Domeh, the Rambam says, I'm going to, just like Rashi said, I'm going to make this easier for you to understand. It's comparable to something else that we all know about it. What is that? Lomer Ha'am Azeh Yebahem Tzadikim Urisha'im. Right? It's like the Torah says, this nation will have righteous people in it and wicked people in it. Lo mipnei ze yomar harasha, kvar nigzar alav sheyeh rasha. But the rasha, you can't say that I'm a rasha because it's part of the edict, because God made me into a rasha. Mipnei shehodia leMoshe sheyu rishaim beYisrael. So it doesn't work for the individual. The individual can't claim that his wickedness, he's a wicked person. His wickedness is the result of God making him wicked. It was God is the average. The Torah tells us that people are like that. But the individual can't claim that he is in that way. Right? Achshav. You got it? Sheyu Rishayim Yisrael. Be'inyan shen ke'inyan shenemar. This is again similar to something else in the Torah, ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev haaretz. Our pasuk, the pasuk that we're learning, that the Torah says there'll always be impoverished people in the land, right? V'chein haMitzriyim, kol echad ve'echad me'otam haMitzriyim. All these Egyptians who did bad things to Yisrael, if they did not wish to do those bad things, they would be able to do so. Ki lo yechdalev. So what is this? It's interpretation, lo yechdalev yon mikerev haaretz. So what does it mean? Why lo yechdalev yon mikerev haaretz? If the people would get together and act the way the Torah wants them to act, there would be yechdalev yon haaretz. But because the Torah says that collectively there'll always be people who are not true to the Torah ideals, don't want to act as the Torah wishes them to act. So there'll always be Evyon B'Kerev. It's not because God promises that there'll be an Evyon. It's rather because an Evyon will always be in the land, because the people will never be able to get it together enough to solve this problem. That's what the Torah says. However, when it comes to a particular avyod and a particular charity issue, everybody can participate. Everybody can participate in that, in that charity. So that's the Rambam. That's the Rambam's idea of solving the problem of avyod ba'aretz. So I want to tell you another way of solving the problem, and that's at the bottom of the page. Rav Nosson. Right, Rav Nachman of Breslov's Talmud, who wrote most of the things that Reb Nachman wrote, except for the Sefer HaMidot. There's a book called Sefer HaMidot, which is a collection of alphabetically arranged aphorisms. It's not without interest, but he started writing it apparently when he was a wee lad, like less than 12. Not all of it. It was has two parts. The book has two parts. There's the part he wrote when he was a kid, and the part he wrote later on when he was a little more grown up. So the part that he wrote, Sefer, it's called Sefer HaMidot. That part that he wrote when he was a kid, it was before he was a Rebbe. And so Rav Nosson was not a Talmud of his. He wasn't there. So just you have. So this is Rav Nosson. Rav Nosson, remember I told you the story? The story about Pesach and Shavuos. Rav Nosson came to Rav Nachman, remember? And he said, I want to say a Torah. I also want, you know, I could do it. And at the end he wrote this book, Likutei Halachot, which is published in 10 volumes. So I guess he could do it. It was also a very interesting idea that he would sort of try to integrate Rav Nachman's ideas in the Shulchan Aruch. So that the book, it goes according to the topics of the Shulchan Aruch. It's interesting. So Rav Nosson, of course, he wouldn't write anything on his own because he was the Talmud of the Rebbe, and the Rebbe, whatever the Rebbe said, he wrote down. That was his job. Right, so he went to Rav Nachman, Erev Pesach. He said, "Went to Rav Nachman, Erev Pesach." He said to him, "I think I could write my own Torah, but would you give me permission to write a Torah?" So Rav Nachman said, "Yes, okay, you can write a Torah, but before you do that, I want you to review all the Torah. I want you to review the Shas, Bavli, Rishali, the Mishnah." All the books of Kabbalah that we learned together. And so Rav Nosson said, so I did that. And Erev Shavuos, I went back to the Rebbe and I said, I did it. And he said, okay, you could write a Torah. That means that Rav Nosson reviewed Kol HaTorah Kula between Pesach and Shavuos. Right? That was his, that was the story. So, I get, you know, that they say, the only way that you can learn Daf Yomi, I say, the only way you can learn Daf Yomi is if you know Daf Yomi. If you don't know the Daf Yomi, it's hopeless. Hopeless enterprise. So, no? You don't get it? So they ask, it says in one of those books, that Rav Kook, Zichrono Livracha, when he was in Volozhin, Rav Kook was in Volozhin for a year, more or less. So he had a Seder of Bikiyut. He had a Seder of Bikiyut. He used to learn Gemara, Chazer. This is the Chazer the Gemara. Bikiyut, so he learned 60 daf a day. That's the story. 60 daf a day. It's probably true. They didn't say that about me. So they said, I cook 60 daf a day. So they said, somebody said to me, how can you do that? How can you learn 60 daf a day? I said, if you don't know it, it's impossible. But if you know it very well, it's a cinch. You know, that's the difference. So Rav Kook wasn't learning 60 daf a day. He was like going through it like a computer. You know, like he just zipped through the whole thing because he knew it. He had learned it all. So that's the difference. That's the difference that's noteworthy. So here we are. Rav Nosson. Look at Rav Nosson. This is what he says. That's our pasuk in Bahar. That's the pasuk in Bahar. If Kimosha Pirish Rashi Sham, don't let him fall. Hold on to him. Ad shelo yipo. He shouldn't fall entirely, right? Remember the weight that's on the donkey? As long as you grab it quickly, you can push it back up. But if it falls, you might need 5 people to pick it up again. So in Kabbalah, they make distinctions between the various parts of the body. And so the kaved, what's a kaved? Yeah, so the kaved is a very important organ. It's seen as the seat of the body's physicality. The moach, the mind, is seen as the seat of spirituality, intelligence, right? All those kinds of things. So he says, aniyut. He says, aniyut, poverty. What is poverty? Humit gabruta kaved ala moach. Chas mishalom. He says, what does poverty mean? What does poverty mean? What is it? What, how would you describe an impoverished person? How do you describe an impoverished person? An impoverished person is a person who thinks about his next meal all the time. That's what he thinks about. He's not able to break himself away from thinking about his physical needs, because he doesn't have a way of solving that problem. So he's stuck there. So he says, Hitgabruta kaved al hamoach chas v'shalom. And so the kaved in you, right, which represents the physical needs, is something that overwhelms your spiritual side of the moach. V'al kein zeh shebalidei aniyut, somebody who becomes poor, Shuit Gabruta Kaved Chas V'Shalom, which is similar to the liver becoming primary, Al HaMoach O Machman Zeh HaAniyut Ma'avir Al Dat Kono. So you see that poverty goes against any kind of spiritual functioning that a person might have, right? Aniyut doesn't allow you to develop your spiritual side. And the yud comes and like just sits on you all the time. You're always worried about how you're going to do it and how you're going to make it, how you're going to get to wherever it is you think you have to get to. He says, and the yud maviro dat kono. It pushes him away from the dat, from the, well, it's also a Kabbalistic word, but it's a Hebrew word as well. The understanding given to him by the Creator. Ki da'ato mitbalbel machmat shehitgaber chasbe, because his da'at, his mind, is not functioning properly. Because the kaved, the physicality of him, overwhelms his ability. So if he's hungry and he doesn't have anything to eat, but he also doesn't know where the next meal that he didn't have is going to come from. So he obviously can't think too much about his relationship to God. And that's not aniyut. Achizat ha-kaved. This is the kaved grabbing onto you. V'kol ma shemitgaber yoter ha-aniyut, nechlash ha-dat v'kol pa'am yoter. And the more you are in a state of aniyut, nechlash ha-dat v'kol pa'am yoter. Your understanding gets weaker and weaker. You become, well, I don't want to bring too many examples, but you can imagine yourself, you could become more like an animal. Like if you think that animals are primarily all concerned about the next meal, and that's how they are. They are the computer that runs that, it works, right? They have to get the next meal, their food. It's very important to them. Kmo kein mitgaber chas v'shalom ha-koved yoter u'machmat zeh ha-anihu b'ka'as tamid. He says what happens is that physical person, that person who is involved in physicality and his own physical needs, becomes angry. Ki ha-ka'as hu b'chinat kaved ko'es. This is also an idea in the Kabbalah. Kaved ko'es. Liver anger, that there's a relationship, right? Because you know people that have problems with their liver in certain situations. Kaveka is shehu b'chinat aniyut. This is an aspect of poverty. So poverty, according to Rav Nos, based on various Kabbalistic sources that he doesn't quote, but poverty is not about an inequity in your monetary situation. but in how much land you're able to have. But poverty is a readjustment in your spiritual design. You are able to be spiritual, but poverty knocks that out of you. He says, "Shehu b'chinat aniyut machmat ze." The Gemara says this: "Batar aniya aniyuta azil." That poverty goes after the impoverished. Right? You know, they say today, you know, like people who grow up in impoverished neighborhoods or those, you know, they produce the same kind of people. They produce people. So this is the Gemara says, the Gemara Baba Kama, the Gemara says, the Bosar Aniya Aniyusa Azil. After the poor, poverty goes. Right? It's like self-defining. Al Kain. Zeshem Rachem al Hani, Umashpielo Panasa, Umichayen Nafsho Mamash. So somebody who gives life to the impoverished, who gives him an opportunity to change the way he's thinking about things, who returns him to this level of spiritual concern, he says, "Mechayen nafsho mamash." It's like you give him a new life. You're changing him around. Yachol atzil eta ani mena aniyut ligamrei. You could save the impoverished from poverty, because poverty now doesn't just mean he doesn't have money. It means his involvement is with his physical side. You could save him from that. And you could bring him back to a more spiritual understanding of things. So he says, Ki al yedei ze shenotein lo umechaye nafsho umarchiv da'ato al yedei ze mitgaber hadat al hakaved. So your mind somehow overwhelms the liver. V'kol ma'asho mitgaber hadat nichna ha-kaved, and as the dot gets stronger and stronger, the kaved, the liver of you, becomes weaker and gives in. Shal yedei zeh mitbatel ha-aniyut kadal. And that's how you get rid of aniyut. You get rid of it. There's no poverty. Because poverty doesn't really have so much to do with money. It doesn't have so much to do with money. There are stories, you know, the Ktzot HaChoshen, the Ktzot. The Ksot wrote a commentary on Choshen Mishpat, on that part of the Shulchan Aruch called Choshen Mishpat, which was a breakthrough. It was like a conceptual breakthrough, as people would like to say. It was something really remarkable. What else was remarkable? That he could not afford to heat his house. And he wrote the commentary, which is called Ksot HaChoshen, in bed, under a blanket. That's how he lived his life, in a bed. I don't know if you've ever been to east of the Danube, then you know it's pretty cold in the winter. And I mean, it's so cold in the winter. I mean, coming from America, you can't even imagine it. That heat is not optional. They just blasted the heat, you know, from whatever they decide, from the end of May, from the end of I don't know, August, whatever, you get heat. You like it, you get it. You don't like it, you get it anyway, because that's how it is. I mean, it's going to be terrible if you don't have the heat. So the Ktzot HaChoshen lived under a blanket, writing his commentary. So I don't think he was thinking about the next meal, even though he might have been considered impoverished. And everybody knows stories like that. You know, there are, the magazines are full of those kinds of stories. Of people who kind of overcome. Who overcome. Well, they don't really overcome. What they do is they have something else to do. They have something else that they can involve themselves with, so that even the poverty doesn't deny them, you know, a kind of spiritual alternative. But here, what the Rav Nachman Bussin is saying is that you can give people that spiritual alternative by giving tzedakah. Ki al yedei zeh she'ozelo malvelo marchiv da'ato, because if you help him and you give him the money that he needs and you broaden his understanding, al yedei zeh nichna kaved, and so the liver of you will give in. וכל מה שנכנע כבד יותר מתגדל המוח יותר. And as the כבד gives in more and more, the spiritual of you opens up more and more. וכל מה שנתגבל המוח יותר נכנע כבד יותר עד שיכול לבטל העניות לגמרי וחדל. So you can do away with it. So what was the trick of Rav Nosson? What was the trick of Rav Nosson? How does he explain the pasuk? I explained that pasuk, V'lo yechtal evyon mikerev ha'aretz. See, he sees it as part of the ongoing struggle. Right? There's a struggle between Tov and Ra. That's something that's inbred with it. That's the way he sees the world. Not only him, many, many Jews have, since the beginning of writing, of Jewish writing, let's say the time of the Churban, Churban Bayit Sheni, that there is this kind of, you have to deal with yourself. Psychologically, the Jews were very much in tune with the idea that people had to make choices. They had to determine how they would be. They it wasn't enough that they knew that some things were tov and some things were ra. That the Torah tells us. There are mitzvot, that's good. And then there are transgressions, that's ra. But that doesn't do it. That doesn't, it's not the knowledge that does it, because there are also desires that we have that we can't always control in a proper manner. So we end up with these questions like, how come I did the wrong thing? I didn't want to do the wrong thing. So Rav Nachman says that each person, Rav Nachman says that each person can resolve within himself, right, the proper balance of kaved and moach, of the liver and the mind. And if you do it, if you work at it, you're able actually to destroy the desire that you have. So it works both ways. The Ktzos, he was happy because he was learning Torah at a very high level. He learned Torah at a high level. And then the Rashash, Rav Shmuel Shtrashin, was very rich. He lived in Vilna and he was very rich. But the rich didn't mean anything. All he did with his rich was he bought Svarim. And he wrote commentaries on every Masechet of Shas. On every Masechet of Shas. And that's what he did. So it is, you conquer it in both directions. Right? It's not only poverty that destroys you, but sometimes it's wealth that destroys you. Everybody agrees. Everybody understands you have wealth, you have to take care of it. Right? You know, it's like a potted plant. If you don't talk to it, it's gonna die. So wealth is the same. If you don't take care of the wealth, you'll find it disappears. So that becomes a job. I'm not talking about having wealth. I'm talking about taking care of it. So the Rashash said, I'm not doing any of that. I'm just learning. So you see that the Ktzos is an example of a person who was not daunted. The Ktzos was not daunted by the fact that he was poor. And the Rashash was not daunted by the fact that he was rich. And so that's what an Evyon is. An Evyon is a person who has the wrong balance. Has the wrong balance and is not able to live up to the level of Moach. We didn't learn the Ramban, but we'll try it again when we get to Parshat Shoftim. Okay, have a happy Lag BaOmer.